When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And this is a show that does not blink. We bring to you the things that are really in your life, the kinds of things that nobody else will talk about. And one of those things is your bladder control. No, do not turn this off. This is going to be a revelation to you. If it is not of concern to you, it may be concern to your spouse, to your friends, and we will make no bones about it. It is something that is not necessary for you to live with. How do I know? Well, I have with me as a guest Dr. Diane Newman. She's the adjunct professor of urology in surgery and research investigator, senior Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. We always talk about the University of Pennsylvania. Those of you who follow the show know that my son went to that school and he's beholden to it. But you also know that I was with the Bettner Institute at the University of Pennsylvania, and my first book in 2008 with regard to money and longevity, How Not to Go Broke at 102, was researched at the Bettner Institute, now part of Wharton. So it's a place that's very fun to my heart, and the work that they do in all areas of health is amazing and probably new to you. So we thank you so much, Dr. Newman, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for bringing this topic to your audience.
Yeah, look, let me say this. How many times have my husband and I stopped the car? Why? Because we were in search of a bathroom. And so if nobody resonates, if that's not resonating with the listeners, I will eat my hat. They know. So let's talk about that. You call it OAB. Let's get a definition out. Explain to us what OAB is and set the stage with regard to what we're speaking about today.
Well, OAB, or overactive bladder, is a problem that occurs when the bladder muscle contracts involuntarily. And it's really very more common than most people think, as it affects about 1 in 10 Americans, which is over 30 million people. And it affects both men and women.
Now, I know it does affect both men and women, but my observation, and this is empirical only, is it seems to affect men more. And I don't know whether that is a function of age, because I know one of your main things that you want people to know is that it doesn't have to be that way with age. But is there a gender difference? Let's unpack this first. And if so, why?
Yeah, a lot of people think that OAB is just because someone's getting older, but that's not true. And what happens is that it occurs in both men and women. We see women develop bladder control problems, actually starting with pregnancy, and then when they go through menopause, and then, you know, as we age. But men also have the problem, especially if they have problems with their prostate when it gets larger, that, you know, can cause some overactivity of the bladder.
Now, this seems to be annoying to people who actually have it, but they don't see it as life-threatening. They often let it go. They live with it. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I know that you say you don't have to live with it. Explain that to us.
Yeah, you know, a lot of bladder control problems like OAB are hidden. People are embarrassed to talk about it, so they live with it. Or they do what we call self-management, self-care practices, like always going to the bathroom when they pass a bathroom, okay, to make sure they get there and don't be caught unaware. They will wear pads if they have incontinence, which is involuntary urine leakage. Or, you know, they restrict their fluid intake. I have a lot of my patients who say, oh, when I come in from New Jersey to Philadelphia, I won't drink, Diane, because I don't want to have to go to a bathroom that, I'm not sure about whether it's clean or not. So they really hide the problem and they manage it themselves. One thing I think it's important for your listeners to know is that there are certain symptoms that may be why, you know, maybe causing your bladder to have this problem of OAB. You know, symptoms like urinary urgency or bladder urgency, where it comes on suddenly, It's like a strong, intense feeling that you really can't defer, that you gotta go right away. Yes. Or they may go often, which is going to the bathroom more than 8 times during the day. Or like I said, they may have bladder control problems like incontinence, where they leak urine when they don't want to. So that's some of what patients will report to me, both men and women.
So I want to flip this a little bit, your example of 8 times a day. This is called overactive bladder. I'm not sure people know what a normal bladder should be and what they should think of. Now, I have a reputation personally of being, they call me the camel, because I never need any water and I never have to stop. I'm a long distance walker and I can go for all day. But I don't know if that's normal. So I would like to know a little bit about, I never heard the 8 times a day. Tell us a little bit about how we can gauge normalcy when it comes to bladder control.
Well, you know, going to the bathroom voiding is really also dependent on what you drink. So really going to the bathroom, if you're, say, over the age of 65, going every 3 to 4 hours is probably normal. You shouldn't go the whole day without urinating. That's not good. The bladder is a muscle. So if you let it go on for hours and hours and hours, it can get larger and you may not empty as well. We don't urinate as completely as you should. So I tell people to go about every 3 to 4 hours. But again, if you're drinking large volumes, I have a lot of people that are on diets where they're drinking, you know, a gallon every couple hours, they may go more frequently. So it really depends on what you're drinking. But yes, it's not good to go too long. And then it's also not good to go too frequently. A lot of people that I see that have overactive bladder tell me they go to the bathroom every hour. Yes. Like their whole lives are tied to the bathroom. And that's not normal either. So you should be able to go expand the bladder to maybe 4 hours. And then if you're drinking a lot, maybe every 3 hours. But that's probably normal.
Now, in the few minutes we have left in our segment, I did want to talk about the fact that it's a muscle. And I have an interest. There's the Kegel exercises. We all know a few exercises we could do. Some people say yoga. But are there exercises that we can take on? And when we come back, we'll talk about thinking about this younger in life. But right now, for the older adult, are there exercises that they can do now that might reverse some of the symptoms?
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of research on doing pelvic floor muscle exercises. So that's exercising the muscle that is at the base of your bladder, surrounds the vagina in women, and then the rectum, and in men it surrounds the prostate. And these exercises sometimes are called Kegel exercises. These do work. These work in young and older individuals. So it's not just a problem, say, that you're not going to be able to strengthen this muscle and use this muscle control, say, bladder urgency to prevent urine leakage. These do work. I teach them every day in my practice. So that's really something that, you know, you can be proactive and use to try to control your bladder.
You know, I failed to say that you are a nurse practitioner. And therefore, I have a question that's much more the patient-doctor relationship for you. I do pretty well in giving information to my doctor. Do people reveal this to their doctors? And if so, do their doctors do anything more than, let's say, watch and see or give a pill? Do you think that doctors today should be told about this? I'm sure the answer is yes. And if so, are they responding with some of these ideas for self-care and exercise?
Well, you know, I've been practicing in this field since 1986. And when we look at survey data, so there's a lot of research out there that's been funded by the federal government and by institutions where they survey men and women and ask them about bladder control problems. And the data still shows that less than 50% of individuals with these conditions of overactive bladder with bladder urgency frequency report their problem to a healthcare provider, whether it be a doctor or nurse practitioner. That data hasn't changed throughout my entire career, and that's disturbing. We're not quite sure why people don't bring it forward. I think there's a stigma around it, you know, we all gained bladder control right after we, you know, maybe the age of 2 or 3 or 4. And to go back to having some loss of bladder control can be very, you know, can be very embarrassing. And that might be why people don't talk to their doctor or nurse about it. The other problem, though, is what you just brought up, is that a man or woman may bring it up to their healthcare provider, but then they're not given choices for treatment. Or they're just poo-hooed and said, oh, well, you're getting older. You know, that's right. To be expected. That is not right. you really have to challenge your healthcare provider, because there are treatments. In addition to the exercises, there's good drug therapy that does work for many, many people. I prescribe it all the time. There's what we call lifestyle changes. Sometimes there's issues with your diet. We know that caffeine can irritate the bladder. It can cause you to go to the bathroom more frequently than you want to. So there are proven treatments that do work.
And when we come back, we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive in some of those things. And we'll also talk about sleep. Sleep and bladder control seem to be handmaidens for unsuccessful aging. And we'll see what we could do about that and why it may happen more frequently at night. Yes, this is the Fountain of Truth about aging. Don't you go anywhere.
Full of it, but that doesn't bother me. Not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da, da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And what we're going to do right now, we always do a little bit of housekeeping. The next thing that's coming up, which is January 19th, is a webcast from the Catalyst Institute. You know that I'm the executive director of the Catalyst Institute. This is with Dr. Snyder of Stanford University. And there we will be talking about big data. You know that the world knows about your healthcare data, but what are we doing with it that's positive? Well, a lot of it has to do with using it for trials for particular drugs, for understanding what's going on in the healthcare system with all of you, AI, artificial intelligence, ways of understanding things faster, speedier that could save lives. So we are doing a big data webcast for you. It's always free. And all you have to do is go on to the website, catalyst.org, K-I-T-A-L-Y-S.org, or follow me. Follow me on LinkedIn and you will, and Twitter, of course, and you will get an invitation, free invitation to register for the big data event webcast on January 19th. Now let's go back to what we were talking about. And I wager that there are very few shows, even shows on aging, that deal with bladder control. But if you've ever had to stop the car so that you can get out and find the place, you know what I'm talking about. And we're here today with Dr. Diane Newman. She's adjunct professor of urology in surgery and research investigator, senior at Perelman School of Medicine. But she's also the principal investigator in a grant with regard to this and so, so much more. Sleep. Now, let me set the stage, Dr. Newman. We talk about the eight things that are most important for successful aging, but we don't talk about them starting at age 65 or 60 or even 50, but much, much earlier. We very much believe that we can live the 110-year life. I used to say 102. I now say 110 after hanging out with geroscientists. And one of those eight things is good sleep. And one of the things that interrupts good sleep is having to go to the bathroom and evacuate. And I'm specifically talking about bladder control. It's usually bladder control. Help us. Now, is it just that we don't have soup or caffeine before we go to sleep? Or is there something about sleep that causes some of the muscles to be less slack? I don't know the answer to this, and I would like to know.
Well, as we age, the heart is not as efficient as far as pumping unless you're at rest. And we also tend to, you know, people have hypertension, so they retain fluid. And what happens when you're upright all day is that fluid goes to what we call extracellular places like your legs, your ankles, and actually your butt. It kind of pools there. And then when you lie flat, the heart's more efficient at night when everything's at rest. The kidneys actually produce more urine during the nighttime, which dumps more urine in your bladder, so you have to get up to go to the bathroom more frequently. So I tell people there's a certain things that we actually suggest. Number one, if you have any swelling in your ankles by the end of the day, wear support stockings, or late afternoon, elevate your legs so that you can get some of that fluid from those extra places in your body back through the kidney so you won't have as much to evacuate whenever you're sleeping. Cut down on what you drink maybe after dinner. You know, some people, you know, tell me I have several glasses of water before I go to sleep. Well, probably that's going to affect you during the nighttime. So there's actually some simple things you use. If you're working all day and you're worried about some swelling, I suggest support stockings. Those really do help. That keeps some of that fluid out of your ankles so that at nighttime you don't have as much produced. So those are some simple things to use as far as to try to impact nighttime voiding.
I'm going to make a connection here, Dr. Newman, that you may not always make. I'm seeing a lot of intermittent fasting. And the reason I'm seeing that is my audience are first responders in anything that will keep them healthier longer, right? And so this intermittent fasting is one of those. In other words, you eat within a 10-hour period, and you have 14 to 16 hours that you don't eat. And that's at night. And what they tell you to do, Dr. Newman, is to drink coffee or tea. That does not interfere with your intermittent fasting. Meanwhile, you're drinking coffee or tea right before you go to sleep. So I could actually see that connection between the healthiest and the most diligent of us and having even more bladder problems as we age.
Right. So, you bring up two things that are really important, coffee and tea. Anything with caffeine is going to make you pee more often, go to the bathroom more often. And that's because caffeine is, number one, a natural diuretic. What that means is that pushes the kidneys to produce more urine, get rid of the fluid. And two, it's an irritant to the bladder. The bladder is a muscle, so it irritates it. So what I tell people if they're getting up at night is actually to cut out anything with caffeine at dinner time. If you want it, fine. Drink it during the day. Start early in the morning in that. But if you do it in the evening hours, you're probably going to get up. Another thing that can cause it also is alcohol intake. You may like your glass of wine with dinner, but if you're going to have a lot of it maybe before bedtime, you may find yourself getting up. So we call these lifestyle changes. There's certain things in the diet that can actually impact your bladder. And you would be surprised how just by shifting around when you drink these things or eliminating them, how much improved your symptoms are.
And before we get on to the medications, just mentioned soda. How does that stack up in all of this? I guess the caffeine would be an issue, but just carbonation itself, does that matter?
There's some data that shows that carbonated drinks may also impact the bladder. It's not as strong as caffeine. But what happens is a lot of people that take diet soda don't realize that also sometimes it has caffeine in it. So I tell people to read the labels. Some of the sugar substitutes like Equal can also impact the bladder. And that may not affect everyone, but it's something to think about is what are the sugar substitutes that's going into the products that you may be consuming that might be also impacting it.
Yes, I do know that there used to be, I don't even know if it's still on the market, something called X-Lax. And it was chocolate. And a lot of people who are on keto diets or low sugar, snacks, they say, it's just like X-Lax. It's terrific from that point of view. But who knows what it's doing to the bladder. Now let's talk about medication. I mean, if a patient is smart enough, you should be smart enough, all of you, to tell your doctor about this problem, there is a good opportunity that they're going to suggest a medication. What's on the market that would be a usual suggestion, and does it have any contraindications or side effects?
Yeah, I prescribe medications all the time for overactive bladder. They can be very, very effective. And there's a new drug on the market that came on the market this year. It's called Gemtesa. It's in a class called a beta-3 agonist. And what it does is it relaxes your bladder muscle so that you don't have those urgencies that come on suddenly and allows you to hold more urine. So what we've seen in the research with this drug is that it really does reduce your need to go to the bathroom, but also the number of times that you're going to the bathroom, and it also can reduce incontinence or urine leakage. Now, all drugs have side effects, so I'm not going to tell you that this does have some side effects, and that includes a headache, common cold symptoms, diarrhea, nausea, urinary tract and upper respiratory tract infections. But again, it really can be effective. It's a once-a-day medication. And you can take it with a glass of water. You can even crush it if you have to. If you don't like to take pills, you can crush it and eat it with applesauce. But it really can be very, very effective. It doesn't in any impact your blood pressure, so it has no changes to anybody who may have hypertension. So it's a pretty safe medication.
So I'm going to also mention before we take a little break, Dr. Newman's books, The Urinary Incontinence Sourcebook, Managing and Treating Urinary Incontinence, Overcoming Overactive Bladder, and several others. So you ought to take a look. We'll find out. I'm sure Amazon is one of the places we'll find out where else these books might be available, and some websites that you could take a look at. But when we come back, we're going to expand this conversation, Dr. Newman, because you're also an expert on pelvic floor disorders of other types that we should all be aware of. So don't you guys go anywhere.
Full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about Aging. And remember that this is your show. Just go to Adrienne Berg, ADRIANEBERG.com. You know how to spell it by now. My mother did not know how to spell it, so she made up the name. I think she heard the name Adrienne on a bus, but it's ADRIANEBERG.com. And tell us who you would like to hear on this show and the topics you would like. Remember, it is your show. And Dr. Diane Newman is here because you want to know about this. Now, what is this? We're talking about overactive bladder, but we're also talking about other issues of pelvic floor disorders with Dr. Newman, who has received a grant. She's working on a grant with regard to, I guess, a longitudinal study of women through the life course with regard to different pelvic floor disorders. We're going to hear about that because the goal of that is not cure, but prevention. So let's take a little bit of a deeper dive, Dr. Newman. There is several websites that you would like us to go to learn more about this. First, let's tell us what they are, and they'll also be on adrienneberg.com.
Yeah, the one website that I do recommend that you go to is something called gemtesa.com, G-E-M-T-E-S-A.com, as there's information there about the medication I just mentioned that came out this year, Gemtesa, but also about overactive bladder, so that can inform you. Also, I have a website called awakenpelvichealth, all one word, .com, and there's information there about bladder training and how to do the pelvic floor muscle exercises. There's downloads on actually an exercise session that you can put on your phone, so that may also be a place to go to. But there is a lot of information on the internet, so please search out about overactive bladder. I like the fact that my patients come to me informed, know what they're talking about, so we can have a better conversation about what they need to, what their goals are to help them with their bladder.
So one of the things that you did mention, and you're a huge advocate, of course, is prevention. This is not the, let's say, the style of healthcare in our country. We do a lot of work. I'm also with the UN. And we're in the middle when it comes to preventing diseases or preventing disorders at best. Number 43 in healthy longevity of the top 100 developed nations. Not good. Not the record we think we should have. But you seem to have gotten our national health groups to be interested in prevention. Question one. For a younger person who's going to the gym all the time, will it help them to learn about these preventative exercises? Is it something that people should put into their usual routine? It sounds like an easy question, the answer being yes, but the fact is behavioral health is a very difficult thing. So what are you seeing with regard to getting that message across for prevention with regard to bladder control?
Yeah, you brought up a really important area that we have more and more information about, is the fact that women, when they exercise during certain things like playing tennis, running, that they actually will leak urine or have urgency, overactive bladder symptoms of urgency or frequency. And what happens with a lot of women is they stop doing that exercise, which is really the worst thing to do. And this is just not older women. This is women, girls in their teens who are doing competitive sports or having problems. So what the NIH has done now, we're in the 7th year of a research consortium called PLUS, Prevention of Lower Urinary Tract Symptoms, which includes overactive bladder, incontinence, and even urinary tract infections. We want to change the paradigm and start to look at what women are doing with their bladder. So we're looking at what we call bladder health. And we're going to start to a longitudinal study of women across the lifespan, starting at the age of 18 up to whatever, 100 or whatever, and to see what they're doing with their bladder, what their bladder habits are, and then how we can work to prevent them with things such as pelvic floor muscle exercises. So I really want to commend NIH because, you know, we're going to try to get ahead of just not treating people when they got the problem. Let's look at maybe before you have the problem, how we can help you keep a healthy bladder.
So let's talk about messaging here. You did say how a few people have, I guess, less than 50% of people even tell their doctor, that they have this issue. I've been working recently with the issue of hearing loss. Over 50% of folks over the age of 55 actually have hearing loss, but they don't deal with it. They don't treat it. And in that research, it's been an issue of self, the way we look at ourselves. We don't want to think that we have a hearing loss because we're getting older. Mm-hmm. Is that the reason that people don't talk about it? Is there an ageism factor, or is it a shame? What is keeping this such a secret when we'll talk to anybody about almost anything in this country?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, loss of bladder control, having an overactive bladder where you're always rushing to the bathroom is embarrassing. And people don't, you know, what I hear stories that from patients that they don't even want to tell their kids that they have the problem because they're so embarrassed about it. And I think that really what drives this is that, you know, as we get older, like you say, we may lose some hearing, we may lose our sense of smell. Oh, my, I'm going to lose my bladder and it's not going to be controllable. So they're embarrassed and there's a taboo around it and they don't bring it up to anybody. And I hope the message is coming through is the fact that, please, there's treatments. So do not just what we call live in silence. Seek out help. You know, challenge your healthcare provider, your doctor, your nurse, whoever you're seeing, and saying, listen, I don't want to live with this. You know, if you're 70, you're going to probably live another 30 years. You want to be in control of your bladder. So you do want to seek treatment. And there are proven treatments that are successful. That's what's so important.
Yeah, by the way, this is the key, the heart. You just touched the heart of what is my mission. And that is to explain to people that biologically, we not only can live longer, but we will live longer. And therefore, you want to live your best life. And anything that you can do as early as possible to make that happen does require a belief that you will live longer. And so we are getting that out to the public. So I'm very happy for you to say that. Now let me relate to a related but different issue, which is urinary tract infection. We actually have had shows on that. And as I explained during the break, the reason I had shows on that, Dr. Newman, is that it's often misdiagnosed or not diagnosed, or in an older adult, written off as a kind of dementia because mm-hmm. there can be confusion. So tell us a little bit about that, because it's another area in which you have great expertise.
You know, it's so funny you're bringing up the issue with correlation between a urinary tract infection dilemma and delirium. Because literally today I was driving from my house down here to Philadelphia to the office, and one of my friends was talking to me about a brother in California whose mother-in-law was discharged from the hospital. They called, said she has Alzheimer's, and basically she had some memory issues because of a urinary tract infection they didn't realize she had. You know, that's part of what our prevention consortium is looking at. That's part of the lower urinary tract symptoms is UTI. As we get older, women particularly are more prone to urinary tract infections because we lose the hormone estrogen in the area of our bladder and our vagina, and that tissue becomes more friable, leading to more infections. And you're right, one of the symptoms that's missed a lot is a memory change. They get confused and they don't realize actually it's the bladder that's the problem. So, you know, just remember that, that urinary tract infections may be more prevalent as we get older. But again, there's treatments and they may cause you not to have a fever, but they may cause you to be confused.
Yes, and we have talked about this. It's happened twice in my life where an older adult was actually saved simply because it wasn't a neurologic problem, it wasn't a mental problem, it was a urinary tract infection, and in one case with a friend of mine. So this is a message I try to get out. And also it's about a topic nobody wants to talk about. That's exactly what we do here. Now we're going to come back in a moment, and we're going to take a deeper dive as to what you guys ought to do next and how you can help other people if you don't have the problem yourself. Don't you go anywhere.
All of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and we are unaccountably at the last segment of our show. I just can't believe it, because this is probably the most important part of the show. You know, as a journalist, they say, don't bury the lead. Well, perhaps we've buried the lead here, so we will make sure that you know the answers to this important question, which is, what can you do now about overactive bladder? And we're here with the person who has that answer, Dr. Diane Newman. You already have had several sessions with her on this show. It's been fascinating to hear. Of course, she's a professor of urology in surgery and research investigator, senior Perelman School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania. She's working with the NIH with regard to a grant on prevention, particularly looking at the life course of women with regard to this, and so much more. But the question now is about you, our listener. You were rattling off during our little break, Dr. Newman, some of the things that people can do right now for themselves. So let's start with that first, and then what they can do with regard to others. First, for those who feel they want to do something preventative or maybe reverse some of the symptoms that they already have.
Well, one thing is very simple is look at your diet. We talked about caffeine. How much are you into consuming? Several cups of coffee in the morning, you find yourself rushing to the bathroom. Cutting down, cutting it in half, going to decaf may help. One thing I didn't bring up that does also correlate is constipation. Having hard stool will put pressure on the bladder and cause you actually to leak urine or cause some overactive bladder symptoms. So I really work with giving patients a bowel regimen, getting your stools more regular. But there's also, as I said, medication. We have a new drug, Gemtesa, that really can be helpful. And the research has shown that when you combine medication with something like pelvic floor muscle exercises, some bladder training, that is the most successful. So I really suggest that you talk to your healthcare provider. Now, I mentioned that we have some websites. Sometimes people don't want to bring it up but want to talk to people. There's actually a great website called Bladder Chatter, which is kind of like a forum or a blog about people who may have problems with overactive bladder. So, you know, that might be also one way to start learning more about it so that you can go talk to your doctor or nurse about it.
You know, I'm fascinated by any consumer that might be on that website, because that would be a person who really understands self-care and wants to do something for themselves. And that's one of the toughest things that we have. So I want to bring that up now. It may not be a problem in the life of our listeners, but it might be a problem in the life of somebody that they love or live with. They see it all the time, and they know about it. It's not a secret. And yet that person, whether it's a parent, a spouse, sometimes even a child, is not doing anything about it. And it's a sensitive thing to bring up. It's one of those sensitive things to bring up that you still would like to help the person you love or your friend. What would you tell them? What is the right way to bring up something of this nature, in addition to the fact that they now have tools like the websites that you just mentioned that they may want to suggest? Or will they just get shut down? So the idea is how to open this conversation in a rational way that's not going to end up in, oh, forget about it, I know what I'm doing.
Well, you know, that's a really tough question. And I tell people that if you notice it, say, in your parent, are they going to the bathroom too frequently? If you find out that they don't want to come over to your house because they're worried about getting to the bathroom, which may not be accessible for them, for someone who has decreased mobility, you should bring it up. What's surprising to me, and I hear this all the time, is even with friends, when they bring up the fact that, oh, I'm always going to the bathroom, their friend may say, you know, I had that problem too. You really should voice it. I'm seeing more and more now in New York Times and different magazines about issues with overactive bladder and the fact that you should not live with it, but you should bring it up. You should not be embarrassed about it. You'd be surprised if you do bring it up. How many people have similar problems? So, you know, I be out in the open about it. I mean, we're living now in a reality as far as people are open about a lot of things. So please don't live in silence. Talk to your spouse, your children, friends about concerns that you may have, because you're going to be surprised how much they understand about these things.
And I do want to mention for the older adult that a lot of the things that are possible for you are actually covered. So you should know certainly with regard to the medications, those would be covered and so on. Now, I want to end with something that that you kind of began with that I think was critical to what's going on here. And that is the fact that we believe that this is normal. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this a lot. Dementia is a senior moment. What does that mean? We think that's normal. And we call it that. The fact is that pregnant women have the same memory issues as you could call it a maternity moment, but we don't. We call it a senior moment. It's normal to see less. Not you know, I have eye problems, hearing problems. Not normal. So let's talk about that. We do think, oh, it comes with age. Mm-hmm. True, not true, and even if true, should we accept it?
Again, we see overactive bladder symptoms across the lifespan of women. So it's just not because you're getting old. That is a myth. And even if you see your symptoms worsening as you're getting older, that doesn't mean you live with it. But it's not. There's a lot of myths around it. Sometimes I'll hear women say, well, it's because part of being a woman, because they started noticing bladder problems whenever they had their baby 40 years ago, when they had a pregnancy and they started leaking urine with laughing, coughing, sneezing. So the point is that this is not just an aging issue. It's a problem for men and women of all ages, and you should not suffer in silence. That's really the message here, is you should seek help because there's help available.
And I hate to do this, but I'm going to end with a scary bit. You did mention that with regard to men, sometimes there's a prostate issue. Mm-hmm. And is this a symptom that they should be looking at their prostate also? What's the relationship there so that we clarify that?
Yeah, you know, men, you know, with aging, your prostate gets larger and it squeezes a tube that leads urine from the bladder to the outside called the urethra. And sometimes the presenting symptom of an enlarged prostate is urgency frequency, which are overactive bladder symptoms. So you're right. It could mean an underlying problem. So men should not live with this either. Men should seek help. Talk to your primary care doctor and say, hey, my flow when I urinate is not as strong. I'm going to the bathroom frequently. Can you help me with this? Really bring it up, because there's really solutions, but it also can mean something else.
Yes, and that's true of women too. And we talked already about the urinary tract issues, which is a separate issue, but a related issue, and so on. Now, to finish off here, I don't want to leave without a repeat of some of the websites, because it is radio. People don't often have a pen or a paper, and we will put it on our website, of course, adrianberg.com. But repeat it for us, and maybe you'll simply be able to Google it. And when you do, you mention that there is a lot of sites that help. Would it simply be OAB that they would Google to find even more sites? I really want people to have an easy access to some of these things that they don't know even existed before they listen to the show.
Yeah, they can Google overactive bladder or OAB or urinary incontinence. As I said, gemtessa.com is one. A kind of a blog, a community is called Bladder Chatter. Just put bladder on your cursor. You know, Bladder Chatter is another one. I have a website called Awaken Pelvic Health that gives you some things you can download as far as doing the exercises. So there's actually quite a bit on the internet. And really educate yourself, because this is really the first start to really seeking help is to learn more about it.
Yes, and I thank you so much, because that's exactly what this show is for. Now, I do know that COVID is rearing its ugly head in certain areas, and I was very happy in the past couple of months I was able to use my punchline, which was get out there, kids, and make it happen. But this time I may have to say stay in or get out there, kids, but make it happen. I'm inappropriate.